It's good to see all that come out. We've got a house full tonight. It's good to see all of you. Some of you drove a long way. We're certainly glad to have you with us. I'd like to say that I've thoroughly enjoyed this week. It's been a blessing to me to be with all of you folks. I hope that you've benefited from something we've studied this week, and I hope maybe it might help you fellowship with God. Again, I'd like to thank the Murphys and the Rampys for the hospitality they've shown us. Julie and I really enjoyed the visit. We enjoyed the food. And appreciate all of you, all of your support, your kind words, and your attendance all this week. And I'd like to thank you again for asking me to come over. Tonight, I'd like it looked at John chapter 5, verses 1 through 18 is where we're going to be taking our lesson from, if you'd like to read along with me. We talk about something that most people find difficult to do. That's create change in their lives. You know, it's never easy to change. People that tell you that it is, they've never tried it. Changing yourself, your situation, your life is not easy, but it is possible. It can be done. It requires that you apply a principle. Tonight that we're going to talk about is a principle of responsibility. If you take responsibility for yourself, I think you'll see a difference in your life. It's sort of a prerequisite for a better life, to change from who you are to a little bit better. We all need to change and grow a little bit. Tonight we look at the story of a man. He was, after 38 years of helplessness, he had an up-close and personal encounter with Jesus Christ. And in the process, he was able to teach us something about this principle of responsibility. The story takes place, like I said, in John chapter 5. In the city of Jerusalem, near one of the gates of the city, at a pool called Bethesda. People would often gather there when they had need of being healed. This was a healing water that were there. So here was this man, he'd been an invalid for 38 years. Jesus came along and saw him there, knowing his situation. He asked him a simple question. He said, "Will thou be made whole?" You know, he's meaning, would you like to get well? Seem like obvious answer to that. If you look at that, you think, well, why would he ask that? But it's not really that obvious when you look at how he answered. Maybe he wanted to be healed. Maybe he didn't. You know, according to his actions, it makes you wonder for the way he answered. Fact is, not everybody wants to be healed. Not everybody truly just wants to be changed from where they are. I'm not talking about just physical infirmities, but what I'm talking about is afflictions in this life, problems and difficulties, challenges and failures. Not everybody wants to be set free. Why? Because being set free means we lose a lot of fringe benefits. There's a lot of fringe benefits comes with our affliction. When you're afflicted, you can feel sorry for yourself. And sometimes other people feel sorry for you too, so you got some company there. When you're afflicted, you've got this built-in, custom-made justification for your faults and inadequacies. You don't have to answer as much as somebody else if you're afflicted. You can say, look at all these terrible things that have happened to me. You can't expect any more out of me than what I'm doing. So it's a good excuse, isn't it? There are fringe benefits of all kinds there. I'm talking about health problems, financial problems, being mistreated in relationship, maybe being taken advantage of in the business deal or whatever. There are fringe benefits. When you lose out on things like that, you can use that to your advantage. And you get others to feel sorry for you maybe sometimes. A lot of people do that. So you have a justification there for your mediocrity. So when Jesus asks, do you want to be made whole? Do you want to be made well? Would you like to be cured? Some people, if they're honest, might have to answer and say, well, I'm not sure I'm ready. Why? Because being made well, being made whole, means that you have to let go of your pity and your pathetic rationalizations. And it means that you have to start taking responsibility for the things that you do. In this lesson we're talking about how to move straight ahead in a forward direction. That means changing what we need to change. And for some, we're talking about major change. You know, we all have different things in our life. Some of us petty little things, and some of us, we need major things changed. And you can't do that until you're ready to take responsibility for your actions, for whatever you're doing. In the story we're looking at today, we'll uncover some essentials for living your life according to the principle of responsibility. I want you to know that I'm not just preaching to you, I'm preaching to me. I do that practically every week. I think most of us at one time or another have given an excuse to justify ourselves. I think we've all done that at one time or another. This is why I did that, because of such and such and such and such. It's a habit we get into, and sometimes we can go too far with it. Let's now work our way through the story as we look at some things we need to do in order to live by the principle of responsibility. First of all, in order to take responsibility for your life, you need to be willing to admit when an idea is not working. Sometimes that's the case. Today's story took place at the Pool of Bethesda. Notice John chapter 5, let's read verses 2, 3, and 4. It says, "Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after troubling of the water, stepped in, was made whole of whatsoever disease he had." So this man's strategy was to go to the pool and do his best to be the first one to get in the rippling water when the angel stirred that water so he would be cured. That was his strategy. We don't know how long he tried this, but we know he was crippled and an invalid for 38 years. We also know that his plan was not a very well thought out plan, because it didn't do him any good. He'd been there 38 years. After a while, you'd have to say, well, this is just not working. When the water was stirred, there was no one there to help him. They couldn't help him in. He was crippled. He couldn't get in by himself. So he waited and waited and waited, hoping that somebody would come along and help him, and nobody ever showed up. So his situation remained the same day after day after day. Taking responsibility for your life means at some point you have to give a good, hard, cold look at reality and admit to yourself what you're doing is not working. It's not right. My plan's not a good plan. Maybe I need to think about this. Maybe I need to come up with plan B. Maybe that's what he should have thought about. Again, I'll emphasize I'm not just referring to his affliction necessarily, but all of our afflictions that we face in this life. Enormous amount of problems we have from day to day. We have all kinds of problems. Your health problems, financial problems, relationship problems. Endless cycle of problems that we run into. We all have a different scenario. We face this same situation again and again and again. Time and time again, we make a weak stab at it, trying to stop and trying to fix it one more time. And we do the same thing we've done the whole time. We try the same thing every time. Just like this fella sat right there by the pool all that time. We don't do any different. We just try that same little thing to try to fix our problem. And the process never ends. It's just an endless cycle going around and around and around. It never gets fixed. We never get anywhere. Albert Einstein once said, "We can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them." Makes sense, doesn't it? Some point we have to be willing to admit this is not working. Maybe it's time to think outside the box a little bit, come up with a different idea, try a different approach. Think of how you approach your job, your relationships, or your finances, your spiritual life, or any other area that really matters in your life. How do you approach it? Are there situations screaming at you, this doesn't work, it never has worked, and it never will work? Maybe you need to listen to that. Don't waste 38 years on an idea that never was good to start with. Take responsibility. That means you be willing to admit that something's not working. That means you can open yourself up to new ideas, new possibilities. Go a different route. Here's another essential for taking responsibility with your life. You need to be willing to let go of your excuses. Jesus asked the man if he wanted to be healed. Simple yes or no question. And the man responded with an excuse. You know, you would think he would just said, "Yes, Lord, I want to be healed." But he didn't. He said, "You want to be healed?" This is what he said in verse 7. The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. That's not what Jesus is asking, is it? But the man was full of so many reasons why it couldn't be done that he couldn't really give Jesus a straight-out answer. He was so full of these reasons why it couldn't happen. That's where his mindset was. We have a tendency to be the same way. You can look at him and think how foolish he was. But we can see God's plan for us in the Holy Scriptures. And it's just as if he's asking us, if you read the Scriptures, do you want to be well? And we're giving reasons why we can't be. Do you want to be happy and blessed? We're giving reasons why we can't be. Tell him why we can't be happy and blessed. You want to be used in a great way, and we tell him all these reasons. I can't be used in a great way because of this, 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 and this. We go through life nurturing these pet excuses that serve to give us permission to stay the way we are. You know, who are we tricking here? We're fooling ourselves, aren't we? We're hurting ourselves. We're giving these excuses. And we'll go ahead and try to give blame to something else. It's not my fault. It's my situation. It's not my fault. It's the economy. It's not my fault. It's the metabolism. On and on and on. It's not my fault. It's my spouse. It's my parents. It's my kids. It's my boss. It's everybody's fault but mine. It's everything else but mine. Jesus didn't ask the man why he was in the predicament. He already knew. He didn't ask the man why he didn't get in the pool. He knew he was crippled and he couldn't get in the pool. He knew already. Instead, he just asked him, do you want to be healed? That's what he's asking each one of us tonight. If you make that comparison there, do you want to be healed? Do you want to be made whole? Do you want to be blessed? Do you want to be useful? Could you answer yes or no to Jesus to that, or could you give an excuse? If you have an excuse, can you blame somebody else for that? Sometimes I think we can. If you do want to be healed, I think now is the time to stop making excuses, stop placing blame, and look instead to Christ. And say with determination, yes, I want to be healed. Yes, I want to be made whole. Yes, I want my life to be right. That's what we should do. We should be honest with ourselves first, and then be honest with Christ. Another thing I want you to see is you also need to be willing to stand up. Jesus said to the man, do you want to be healed? He said, sir, I have no one to put me in the pool. You know, he's still. Verse 8, he says, rise, take up thy bed and walk. That's what Jesus said to that man. So what did he do next? Well, he got up. When Jesus told him to do that, he did what he was supposed to do. But you know, he could have responded differently. He could have, when Jesus said rise, he could have responded like some of us do sometimes. Could have said, but I can't, I'm crippled, I can't walk, I can't rise. If he'd been like some of us, respond like that from reading the Scriptures, God clearly tells us things to do. And we go back to those excuses and blame and all that, and we don't answer him like we should. Jesus told him, the man, he said, rise and walk. It was decision time for him. A lot of times we face decision time, and we just kind of shirk it a little bit. We kind of put it on the back burner. We don't want to face it. Because we know sometimes if we really do that, if we just really say, yes, I want it, I want it. We know that we're going to have to give up a lot of things that we don't want to give up. We're going to have to change a lot of things that we don't want to change. So a lot of times we want to just stay lukewarm, sort of, put it on the back burner and just not face it, not stand up, not make that decision. So when Jesus told him, said, rise and walk, he could have said, are you going to lay there and wallow in your excuses? Are you going to get up and then just stand up with the power that's in your legs that I'm going to put in your legs? You going to do that? Or are you going to say there's no power in my legs? I can't walk. You going to take up your bed? You going to try to blame it on 38 years of history telling you that you can't walk, so you're just not going to give up and you're not going to stand up? think there's a lot we can learn from this crippled man and from what Jesus told him and what the man said back. I want to make something clear. If you want to create a major change in your life, and I believe every one of us, we might not have major changes to make, but every one of us has a change we need to make. There's something that's bothering every one of us, something that we need to straighten out, one area or another. And you're not able to do it with your own power. You're going to need God's help to do it. You cannot change by yourself. You've got to have God's help to do it. So I'm not suggesting that you try. This man by the pool didn't pick himself up by his own bootstraps. He didn't do it on his own power. It was Jesus that caused him to do it. That's what it'd take for us. He was first touched by the power of Jesus Christ to make him do that. He couldn't do it with his withered legs. They were weak, withered legs. He couldn't have done it without Jesus. 38 years, he would have gotten up had he been able to do it. Yet Jesus gave him a single specific command to obey, rise, and when he obeyed it, his healing became obvious. When he obeyed Jesus, he was healed. I believe God's telling you in some area of your life, rise. And you might respond, Lord, I just can't do it. I can't get up. I'll need some help. If he says, stand up, you say, well, I can't stand up. I'm crippled. I'll have to have somebody to prop me up, whatever. We keep telling him all this. And he says, you don't need anything. Stand up. What I'm saying is we can't give him an excuse. We'll hold water. No matter what you tell Jesus, if you say, I cannot, whatever your excuse is, it's not good enough because you can. There's nobody in the world that cannot come to Jesus, no matter what their situation. They can give their life to Jesus. They can. So no matter what you say, God doesn't accept excuses. I say that because I've used excuses before. I was out of the church a good while, and I said, well, I'm going to start back when I get to where I'm not working on Sundays. I could have quit my job and got a job where I wasn't working Sundays. See what I'm saying? You can take the bull by the horns. You can change your situation if you want to. God's asking you to come. You can come back. You can come into the church. You can come to Jesus. No excuse will hold water. None whatsoever. So if you're thinking right now, well, this is holding me back, this is holding me back, this is holding me back. If you can have a discussion with Christ, he could tell you where you're wrong. If you read the scriptures, you can see where you're wrong. In order to take full responsibility for your life, you need to believe something down to your very core. God empowers you to do what he wants you to do. When God asks you to do something, he will give you the power to do it. God would never ask you to do anything that you couldn't do. And you can do a whole lot more than you think you can. He won't tell you to provide for your family unless he knows you can do it. He'll give you the power to do it. He'll not tell you to forgive your enemies and be faithful unless he thought you could do it. He'll give you the power to do it. He has and he will. Your finances, whatever. He empowers you to do all this. The question is, are you ready to stand up? He's standing there. Are you ready to stand up? That's what he's asking. Are you ready to take the first step of obedience? If you want to create a change in your life at some point, you've got to decide to try. You're the only one that can change your life. Nobody else can change it for you. Anybody else can advise you, your own mother. I had my mother sit and talk to me. We've had all of us have had people to talk to us. Doesn't do any good till we decide ourselves, does it? You got to decide through the power of God to get on your feet and stand up and decide what you're going to do. You must be willing to take that first step of obedience. Be willing to stand up. Now, I spent a good bit of time on that in these first three points here, but there's more to this story, and I have to point this out. I'd be amiss if I didn't really go into this part of it. There's another couple of points I want to cover. If you want to create major change in your life, you need to be willing to face opposition. You're going to face opposition. It's just out there. We have to deal with all sorts of people in this world, don't we? There's all sorts out there, and we have to understand how human beings can be sometimes. They're not always on our side. It's a proven fact that when someone is well-blessed, maybe they have a thriving business and they're very successful, far above all the rest of their friends, He thinks that maybe they'll be happy for him. And sometimes right the opposite is true. They resent the fact that he's doing better than they are. They're jealous and envious. They say things like, well, he's just a little too big for his britches. He thinks he's something. They're jealous. They're not happy for you. That happens. That's inevitable. That's a fact of life. We see that in tonight's text. When God begins to move in your life, you can be sure there'll be some that come out, decide that they want to move against you. They don't want to see you happy. Nobody was bothering this man. He lay there at that pool 38 years. Nobody bothered him. But as soon as he got up and walked, the critics came out of the woodwork. Their excuse was that the healing took place on the Sabbath. They should have been happy for this man. This man had been an invalid 38 years. They should have been happy for him. But no, they were against him because the healing took place on the Sabbath. And these so-called religious leaders said to him in verse 10, "It is the Sabbath and is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. Get a drink of water here. All through his ministry, Jesus had to face these folks. They was always after him, and he heard that a whole lot about doing this on the Sabbath. Whatever he was doing on the Sabbath, they was always against him, on and on and on. They were so stubborn in their belief. In order to be holy, to keep all these Sabbath rules, they didn't care if it was saving somebody's life, raising the dead, whatever it was. If he was doing any work on the Sabbath, they was totally against it. They gave Jesus a hard time because of that. So they came after this man. And his response wasn't exactly what it should have been. You know, what he should have said was, "Yes, I just got healed. I'm glad I got healed. Hallelujah. I'm thankful that I got healed." But he was sort of afraid of them, the way they approached him, and so he directed them towards Jesus. Jesus is the one that did this. I believe the man could have responded a little differently. But sometimes we don't always stand up for Jesus, do we? Sometimes we don't always, and he certainly hadn't had any practice, I guess. He'd been laying there by himself. We certainly know better, but sometimes we shirk our duty. He didn't. Nevertheless, we can learn a lesson from his mistake there. When you take responsibility for your life and allow Jesus to do his work through you, people will complain. They'll criticize you. They'll be jealous. They'll insist that you didn't deserve it. Proper response is not to cower and quit. Proper response is to say what Jesus said when the religious people asked him that, when they was criticizing him. Confronting him, "Why did you do this on the Sabbath?" Verse 17, he said, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." In other words, look at my hand. I'm busy doing God's work. That's what he was saying. Make no mistake about it. Living by the principle of responsibility means that great things will happen in your life. If you start doing that, great things will happen in your life, which means the critics will come crawling out from under the rocks and they're going to tell you what you're doing wrong. Here's the thing, though, it's important to know. If you live by this principle of responsibility, if you live by that, if you take that into heart, be willing to own the outcome, whatever it is. If you win, fine, but if you don't, man up. Just say, "Yes, it's my fault. I did this." Accept responsibility. Accept blame. Don't accuse somebody else. Jesus said something very interesting to this man. After the man was healed, Jesus found him in the temple, and he said here in verse 14, he said, "Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee." Was that a threat? No, it was a warning. One that we should all take heed of. This man had been given a great opportunity. He'd given a new start to make something special of his life. Jesus was urging him, "Don't you mess up. Don't blow this opportunity that you've got." Why? Or else he'd be back to being sick. You think that's what he was saying? No, he says something worse. You know what's worse than being sick and helpless and being an invalid for 38 years? You know what's worse than that? Being healthy and whole and brimming with health and potential and wasting your life meaninglessly on empty, selfish, and sinful life. That's what's worse. He said, that's what'll happen to you. Living according to the principle of responsibility means I own my behavior. I own my thoughts and ideas and words and attitudes, and I own the consequences as well. Whatever I do wrong, I face it. That's what he's saying. Sometimes doing a responsible thing doesn't get you a pat on the back. Sometimes it causes enemies, doesn't it? It results in more trouble, really. But it doesn't matter. That's what we have to do. If that's what it is, that's what it is. You do the responsible thing because you're committed to owning the outcomes of the decisions you make. An example of this can be seen in Jesus. He's our example. He did that. Jesus is the epitome of principle of responsibility. He took responsibility. He was willing to own the outcome of his actions when he healed this man. And the words he spoke in response to his critics was, what was the outcome of that when he talked to them? What happened there? Verse 18, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him. That's what it cost him when he healed this man. The healing of this man ultimately led to his death because they just kept following him worse and worse and worse. They were out to get him. Jesus knew that when he healed the man. But Jesus stood up to his responsibility. It didn't matter to him. He was going to do what God wanted. It didn't matter. When he said, rise and take up your bed and walk, he knew they'd be after him. He knew what they thought about the Sabbath. But Jesus could have put it off till the next day and said, let's wait till tomorrow and I'll heal you tomorrow. He wasn't concerned about them. He was concerned about doing God's work. And he didn't shirk his duty, his responsibility, and he faced up to it. Path of responsibility is not a primrose path. It doesn't necessarily make your life easier, but it does make it greater. Much, much greater. If you'll try that, you may be already doing that, but if you're not, I suggest you try that. Be responsible for yourself, and you'll see more of what you need to change and how much better you need to do than what you're doing. Sometimes we fool ourselves. We start giving these excuses about what we're not doing to trying to fool somebody else, and we get to believing in ourselves. But if you'll start facing up to responsibility of what you've done, take responsibility for it, you'll see how bad you're messing up in places. In conclusion, with great power comes great responsibility. The more responsible we are, the more responsibility God will give us. That's true, and we know it's true, and we can only pray that those in power know that too. When you let go of your feeble excuses, start taking steps of obedience, and we take ownership of every decision you make, every outcome that you create, you'll experience power in your life, the power of God, power greater than anything you've ever known. I think we can learn a lot from just that small passage there. If you need to make a change in your life, if you've thought about that, God will help you do it. Maybe a small change, maybe a huge change. We all need to improve. If you need the prayers of the church for whatever reason, if you need to be baptized, if you need to be rebaptized, whatever you need, we stand willing and ready while we stand and sing.